Hi everybody, I'm Larry.
Hi Larry.
I'm 66 years old and my favorite candy is Skittles.
Woo!
I just had to get that out. So tonight I thought we were having a book study meeting. I brought a bunch of books. And I went to the AA speaker meeting last night, and my higher power is all I can attribute it to. I give this young man a ride who had a stroke, and he's been in and out of recovery quite a bit over the last couple, 3 years, and I know his father a little bit, but he started standing up in the meeting and telling that he was a newcomer. And last night he stood up and he had 12 days. So when we were riding home last night, the speaker was really good, by the way, but when we were riding home last night, he gave me this prayer book. He said his father wanted me to have it. And the reason why I'm going to say a prayer from this book tonight is because I'm going back. I'm going to digress a little bit. When I first started meeting with my Al-Anon sponsor, we would get together at lunch and we worked the steps, and I started writing prayers. I don't know why I'm not a prayer writer kind of guy, but I started writing prayers, and they were very heartfelt prayers, and I believe my sponsor and I bonded a lot because of those prayers. Plus, I did the work, I did the steps, and so I tried to write a prayer for tonight, and I revised it like 3 days later, and God said, "Why don't you let me help you?" And this is the book, and I'm going to read the prayer that is in this book. They came to me from this young man, from his father to me. And it says, "Creator God, I focus often on how I want others to change. I pray for them, I nag them, I lecture them, I beg them. I try to manipulate them. Ultimately, none of this does much good. Instead, God, show me where I need to change. I put myself in your hands. I'm willing to have you do whatever it takes to heal my relationships. Amen."
Amen.
Okay, so I got the prayer out of the way. I actually had to have an outline. I grew up in a military family, so if I showed up to any kind of thing without an outline, then I was sent to my room. Part of my story is I had no voice. I was physically abused, verbally abused, emotionally abused by my father quite a bit. And so I identified with oppressed people. So I used to identify with Native American Indians, with the blacks during the civil rights, with women's rights that are still, all those things are still going on. And so I have a from the Native American Indians, and this is attributed to the Sioux Indians, and it's the author's unknown. It says, "An old Cherokee told his grandson, 'My son, there is a battle between two wolves inside us all. One is evil. It is anger, jealousy, greed, resentment, inferiority, lies, and ego. The other is good. It is joy, peace, love, hope, humility, kindness, empathy, and truth.' The boy thought about it and asked, 'Grandfather, which wolf wins?' The old man quietly replied, 'The one you feed.'" And so for me, this has a lot of meaning to me, because the essence of ACA for me is, for 50 years, I've carried a false self around, and it became my persona, and it's the way I express myself to the outside world and hid all my pain and my inner child, my true self, my good self, forever. And only in the last few years, because I've gotten a sponsor, because I've had a higher power who says, get off your ass and share. Come to meetings. Be a co-sponsor. That's something I would never have done. If you told me I'd be standing here tonight talking to you guys, no. I would still be hiding and I'd be in isolation. I'd be doing my drugs. I'd be judging you guys from a distance. Now I get to judge you right up close. So, thank you. So I found out, this is another thing. So I'm working AA Al-Anon actively, ACA actively. And I was in an Al-Anon meeting the other day, and after the meeting a person said, would you like to go to another 12-step meeting? And I thought, this is crazy. I mean, like, how messed up am I? And she meant it very earnestly, and it's probably, you know, I'm thinking, higher power? Really? I've got to do more stuff? So I said, I'll think about it. And but I found out that, so in Al-Anon, I had to do a workshop, and a person came up to me after a meeting and said, why don't you do it on higher power? And this is like, on higher power, you're doing all this stuff to me. So anyway, I found out that the steps, the 12 steps, mention higher power or God in 6 of the steps. And so it's like, if you're struggling with doing the steps, you're going to have to come to terms with God somewhere along the way if you want to work the steps. And when I got here, I didn't have a higher power. I didn't have God. I had childhood memories of Irish Catholic upbringing, very fearful of God. I used to get in trouble a lot at school, and so I always used to think God was like, and especially going to confession, was like going to the principal's office. And I just didn't have a relationship and didn't want to have a relationship with God. And so when you come in here and you work the steps, you're going to have to face God, the understanding of your God, whatever it is. And for me, when I first got to step 2, came to believe in a power greater than myself, could restore me to sanity. Well, first of all, I wasn't insane, so I was totally in denial. And second of all, a power greater than myself? No human being can tell me what that is. That's how I used to think. I mean, that was my mentality. That's how I was raised. Step 1, I'm powerless over my upbringing, my family of origin, how I was brought up. I'm powerless over that. If I try to do it all by myself, then I'm powerless over everything. You guys have taught me that. Get a higher power. Get a sponsor. Work the steps. Do all the things. And I will get into these books that I have behind me because they've saved my life. They've saved my inner child. My false self is not being as fed as much as it was before I came in these rooms. And I know that the wolves are very revered by the Indians. And so, because I was, you know, growing up, I was afraid of like werewolves. I thought they were going to get me at night, you know, that kind of stuff. So wolves, the good wolf, you know, the wolf. And I liken it to like, you know, having an angel on one shoulder and the devil on the other shoulder. Like, I can think of it that way too. Okay. So when I got here, I heard about codependency in the Big Red Book, and I'm going to read it because every time I see it in anywhere in any book and they talk about codependency, I have to read this because I didn't understand what codependency was. And some of these readings are real short, so bear with me. Like, I'm not going to read and try to proselytize to you about everything. But here's what, in ACA, we realized we could not have reacted another way given our dysfunctional upbringing. As children, we focused on the odd and neglectful nature of our parents' behavior. We mistakenly thought we caused their moods or attitudes or could do something to change circumstances. We did not realize that we were children and the adults were responsible for their own feelings and actions. Many of us thought we caused our parents' addiction. We took responsibility for their drinking or drugging, thinking we could make them stop, slow down, or eventually love us. As children, we took responsibility for our parents' anger, rage, blame, and pitifulness. We were children. that we unknowingly took responsibility for our parents' feelings and poor behavior. This mistaken perception born in childhood is the root of our codependent behavior as adults. By living with blaming and shaming parents, we develop a dependent false self. Our false self constantly seeks outward affection, recognition, or praise, but we secretly believe we don't deserve it. Meanwhile, the inner child is driven inward into hiding. The false self is the adult personality expressed in the 14 traits. So when I first read the 14 traits, I went, oh my God. I think the only one I didn't relate to was para-alcoholism, and then I found out what para-alcoholism is, and I might try to explain that a little bit to me too. So I believed when my father got on top of me by the couch and beat the shit out of me because I broke into some houses with some kids in the neighborhood when I was 12 years old, and that I deserved that. That I deserved to be my mother telling me, I'll never forgive you. I almost got our family kicked off the military base. So that was the worst thing in the world. So this tells me I didn't deserve it. I made mistakes. I deserved to be disciplined. I deserved to learn from my mistakes, but I didn't deserve to have the shit that happened to me because of that. And I did. I had to make amends. It took me a year to pay off $30 of trinkets that I stole from the house as I was 12 years old. But I didn't deserve the anger, blame, rage, all that stuff that came from my parents. That was and the thing that I know now, of course, is that that was passed on to my parents. This is what ACA teaches me. And I passed it on to my sons. And I cried to my father through really big tears and said, I'll never hit my kids like you hit me. And then I did. I did hit my kids. So, codependency, which leads me to self-esteem. I came in here, I had zero self-esteem. I hated myself. My inner child was so... when I first heard about inner child here, I couldn't handle it. I thought, what are you talking about? I mean, like, I have these different things inside me. There's a thing that in here that tells me that I'm one, that all of that is one. All the things going on in me. When I first told the joke about Skittles being my favorite candy, my inner child said, go for it. My critical parent said, well, what if they don't laugh? What are you going to do? Where are you going to go from there? I had that debate. And I said, inner child, you're winning today because I'm going to say it. Right? So there's some recovery. So emotional sobriety. And this is a big thing for me, because when I first got here and I heard people talk about emotional sobriety, it's like, what the beep is emotional sobriety? And who cares about that? I'm sober. I don't drink. I don't use drugs. Now I have to get emotionally sober. And so I'm going to read to you again. It's kind of hard for me to read.
You want some light?
Do. But this is really poignant for me. And I wanted to share it with you guys. And again, you know, it's like, thank you so much, George. So it says, and this is in the workbook. This is the ACA 12-step workbook. I did work the steps in Al-Anon. And I've heard people talk about their AA experience working the steps. And I want to tell you that it's different in ACA. And it took me and my co-sponsor, and we met once a week. It took us 14 months to get through this book with a lot of tears and a lot of, you know, digging in, trying to find our inner child, not be so critical of all the stuff that we did as a result of growing up in a dysfunctional family. So it says, by working the 12 steps of ACA and attending meetings regularly, we begin to realize that ACA recovery involves emotional sobriety. That is what ACA recovery looks like. But what is emotional sobriety? To understand emotional sobriety, we must first understand emotional intoxication, which is also known as para-alcoholism. Para-alcoholism represents the mannerisms and behaviors we developed by living with an alcoholic or dysfunctional parent. As children, we took on the fear and denial of the alcoholic or non-drinking parent without taking a drink. And then you know, when I was, I didn't do any drugs or any until I was 19 years old. So my childhood was the pure alcoholic result of my parents' alcoholism and their addiction. Emotional intoxication can be characterized by obsession and unhealthy dependence. There can also be compulsion. Even without drugs and alcohol, we can be drunk on fear, excitement, or pain. That was pretty big for me. What do you mean? I'm drunk with all the stuff that I grew up with, the chaos in my family when there was hitting and fear and anger and all that other stuff. I still stimulate myself that way. You know, and I'll get into that. Like, I live with my ex-wife still, who doesn't appreciate me at all. But I have a roof over my head in Santa Barbara, and I get to see my sons each day. But is it worth it? I'm learning that it's not worth it, because my inner child is suffering forever and a day. You can also be drunk on arguing, gossip, or self-imposed isolation. I was the king of isolation. I was totally afraid of you guys. I didn't want you to know my pain. In essence, the laundry list and the 14 traits of adult children offers a textbook example of behaviors and attitudes that characterize an emotionally intoxicated person. I drove emotionally intoxicated all the time, and I never got a DUI for that. We fear authority figures and judge ourselves harshly while being terrified of abandonment. Without help, we seek out others to reenact our family dynamics. We marry them. That's what I did. I played music with my brother and other people for years and years and years, and we did all that crazy shit. Totally dysfunctional. We played some good music once in a while. We can recreate our family dysfunction at home and on the job indefinitely until we find ACA. So I'm a good employee, but I hate management. I hate them, and I let the guy know all the time, my boss's boss. So I'm acting out all this crap over and over and over again, not just with my family members, but even at work. I'm sick. This means that our adult relationships resemble the template relationship we developed as children to survive an alcoholic or otherwise dysfunctional home. We find others to create chaos, conflict, and unsafe relationships. Emotional sobriety involves a changed relationship with self and others. We measure emotional sobriety by the level of honesty, mutual respect, and acceptability of feelings in our relationships. If our relationships are still manipulative and controlling, we are not emotionally sober, no matter what we tell ourselves about our recovery program. So I know I'm still intoxicated emotionally, but I have hope. Emotional sobriety means that we are involved in changed relationships that are safe and honest. We feel a nearness to our higher power. We cultivate emotional sobriety through the 12 steps and through association with other recovering adult children. That's what I'm doing with you guys tonight, because I think we're all in recovery at some level. That's pretty powerful. That's what this whole book's all about. And it took 14 months to get through this book. It's crazy. And then, of course, there's the big red book. I had to put more tape on it. And this says BRB. I don't know if you can see that. That's my inner child, BRB. And just in case I forgot, BRB on the back page. That's how my inner child likes to play. So let's see. So I was in a meeting the other night, and we talked about anonymity. And for a lot of us, it's hard to say anonymity. See, that was not easy for me. But on page 550, I have to read this to you in the big book, if I can see. Can you help me find 550?
I can.
Is that
541?
Yeah. Okay. I love this, because I had always thought of anonymity as, like, you know, being faceless, or, you know, not being discovered for whatever issues I have, compulsions. But here it is in a different light. Anonymity underlined by humility is the bedrock of ACA principles. I never knew that. I just found that out. Anonymity is a spiritual principle that anchors not only the 12 traditions, but also the 12 steps. Each of the 12 steps has an inherent element of anonymity, which diminishes our egos and places God in the center of our lives. I'm just starting to get to that point where God is with me and my inner child, and my false self and my critical parent are, and it says it here, I'll read it to you. We are asking our false self to step aside in anonymity and to allow the true self to emerge. We desire to replace our codependence by reparenting ourselves with respect and gentleness. That's the solution, I think, right? Our actual parent. And when I first heard becoming an actual parent, I thought, I have really fucked up parents. Why do I want to become my own parent? But now I understand how it is. So then I brought the Daily Affirmation book, which I like. I don't read it every day. Thanks for letting me read to you guys. Coming from a family of dysfunction, we developed a fear of authority. I know that's trait one. When we escaped, we vowed to never let another person control us. We found ourselves either being an abuser or the dependent one in most relationships. We develop, including working relationships, religious relationships, and friendships. When we finally found ACA, for some of us, choosing a sponsor to help us work the steps often led to the same type of relationship we were familiar with. Then we discovered the fellow traveler model of sponsorship. We found this peer-to-peer concept helped keep us out of our people-pleasing and running someone else's life behaviors. It put us on equal footing and allowed us to travel the road of recovery together. On this day, I will walk hand in hand with my fellow traveler so we can help each other recover from the less traveled road. And for me, I know I was meeting with a co-sponsor the other day, and we were talking about the AA version of this, which was one drunk talking to another drunk. And for us, it's one ACAer talking to another ACAer, which is what I'm doing right now with you guys. I'm sharing a little bit of my story, trying to let you see what these books have done for me, how it's made me to be able to stand up here with you tonight and not try to show you or teach you anything. That's why that prayer, when I saw that prayer, I went, cool. It's like, hey, I want to tell you guys, look what I am. Hey, look what you guys can do. It's like, well, no, look what I am doing. And if you want it, you know, like that's, you know, hey, if you want that too, then it's all in these books and you can find it your own way. So I really appreciated that. I have to tell this story a little bit, and I want to say how much I love this person. I told you I was writing prayers when I met with my Al-Anon sponsor. One of the last prayers I read with him, I said, higher power, please help me forge a closer bond with my sponsor. Why did I write that? I didn't even know why I wrote that. And that was on a Friday. We used to meet on Fridays for lunch. And then I got invited to my first ACA meeting. I walk into that meeting, and my sponsor is leading that meeting. My Al-Anon sponsor is leading that meeting. And I get goosebumps every time I talk about that. And I said, why didn't you ever tell me about ACA? He said, well, you were pretty fucked up. You weren't ready to hear the ACA story. You were barely dealing with Al-Anon. So God brought you here when you were ready. And so that's where I am tonight. God brought me here tonight, you know, because I'm ready. My inner child is ready to blossom. And my false self, who I lived with for 50 years, and when I first found out that I was a false self, I felt really ashamed and like, oh my God, like I've been I've been bullshitting my whole life. And it's like, well, guess what? That's what you were taught to do. And that's how you survived in the craziness in your family. That's how I survived. And I don't want to... I love this too, because... So in therapy, I'm digressing a little bit, but in therapy, my therapist tricked me into not drinking. And she was an AA person, and I wasn't ready for AA, but she tricked me into not drinking. And so, of course, my oldest son, who's 33, said, "Well, you're a dry drunk, Dad." And I used to get all defensive about it. And then I said, "Well, yeah, I finally could admit that I was a dry drunk because I didn't have any spiritual awakening. I didn't have anything that changed my life other than I just stopped drinking." You know, and I have a really beautiful feeling for AA, especially because my youngest son, whose addictions were meth and heroin, how he's going to AA, I have no idea. But that's the program that resonates for him. That's his path. And sometimes now, we joke, this is my youngest son. And he'll come home and say, "Hey, Dad, I worked 3 steps today." And I'll go, "Well, I worked 5 steps. And he can't you just say, "Dad, hey, that's great, Nick. I really love that you worked those 3 steps. I have to make it about me." You know, so that was a beautiful thing I'm learning from my sons. You know, my oldest son is the one that said, "You need to go to Al-Anon." So I went to Al-Anon. But how amazing is that to ask for a closer bond with my sponsor and then go to my first ACA meeting and my Al-Anon sponsors leading that meeting. It's beautiful. So then we tried to get together to work these steps, you know, and then somehow things, business related issues, things happened. I got busy, he got busy, and then I found out about this fellow traveler model. And I went, "Well, I guess I can't take the steps with him in ACA." And so just because of my fear of authority. And he's never, ever, ever, in any time we've ever related to each other, been that way. But that's just my childhood fears, because my father was so dominating. But I'm happy to say that we have worked the little bit of the traits book together. And I'm working with 2 other co-sponsors. And I tried to do it in Al-Anon, and I didn't know how to sponsor. I didn't know how to... Because I don't know how to lead anybody. I don't want anyone leading me. So how can I lead you, even though I have some experience? So it's beautiful to be side by side. So I'm going to bring this book up. This is the last one, by the way. In case you're wondering. This is the Traits Laundry List book. Okay, so this one's crazier than all the rest of them. I mean, the details is just ridiculous. But I actually, with the co-sponsor's help, started to figure this out. And we're on trait 6. So there's 14 traits. And you have, this is just ridiculous. You have the laundry list, which is the 14 traits we all know. There's an other laundry list, which is one that I relate to a lot, because that was the one that I did with my sons. Passed the shit down the line, generation from generation to generation. Then there's a flip side of the laundry list, and then there's a flip side of the other laundry list. So like 4 different little boxes, and then they ask you all these freaking questions about it. And so, you know, we talk about in this book, if you go through this book, how excruciating it is because you're digging up all your childhood stuff. I don't want to dig up that stuff. That was bad enough as it was. I keep have nightmares about my dad all the time. But I had to go back and visit that stuff. But I'm not there wallowing in it and feeling sorry for myself. You can feel it, you can hear it in my voice, though. I mean, it's there, PTSD. I've never been able to talk to my dad about it. He's 90 years old. If he knew I was in here talking right now, he'd probably put me in my room. So I wanted to read this, because here's one of the questions they have. This is the other laundry list, so the one where I pass the shit on to my sons. "It has been said that when you are pointing at another person's deficiencies, it's because you have the same deficiencies. Do you think this is true? Have you ever experienced being irritated by someone else who is similar to you? Were you able to see the similarities between yourself and the person who you found irritating? Do you instead think that they were the cause of your frustration, and if they would change, you would feel better and the situation would resolve? And then you have to write all these examples. How about these questions? Because, you know, I got all that childhood stuff out in those steps. It's like, well, no, you didn't, because now we're going to ask you to list all the self-centered and irresponsive people you encountered while you were growing up. I don't want to think about all that stuff. Kids that I broke into the houses with, they were irresponsible. I was irresponsible. I had to point at myself. Make a list of the people in your childhood who were not self-centered. Wow. Describe in a separate list what you think made these people self-centered and irresponsible. Circle items in this list that are similar to the dysfunction that you learned and that became a part of your false self. Low self-esteem. Not connecting with the community. I didn't care about my neighbors or anybody. I didn't want to, so why would I care about you guys? My false self wouldn't at all. My inner child's like, please love me, because I want to love you guys too. I don't want to live in this false self anymore. Not having a higher power. I didn't have a higher power when I got here. I hated God. Not having someone to talk to. I was in isolation all the time. Life not having meaning. Fear. Not seeing how their actions affect others. That's an irresponsible person who gives a shit what happens to the people that I cross in my life. It's all about me. That's pretty good. Those are pretty good questions in this book. And to take the traits and figure those out along with the ACA steps, they're different. And step four is just, man, you want to talk, if you guys haven't done step four yet, don't do it if you're not ready to go through a lot of shit. Yeah, I remember, because there's 12 exercises in step four, unexpressed anger, unexpressed grief, PTSD, you know, trauma work. And I was working with another person and we went through all that stuff together, and I got to hear his stuff and he got to hear my stuff. I wasn't ashamed and I wasn't afraid. I know that I love that person like you wouldn't believe. He lives in Seattle. We did all this stuff mostly we did the steps together for quite a while, and then he moved to Seattle and we just kept it going. We got through this book and we're on step, you know, trait six. We're almost through trait six. So, I talked about emotional sobriety. And this one's not very long. See, that's my fault, selfie. Being all fearful. My inner child says, your guys are going to listen. So this is on page 628 of the big book. Big red book. Right there, in case you guys forgot. In his Next Frontier article, Bill wrote, and Bill was AA, Bill W., if we can examine, and this is AA, this is what I love, back of our book, the very last pages of our book, in his Next Frontier article, Bill wrote, if we examine every disturbance we have, great or small, we will find at the root of it some unhealthy dependency and its consequent unhealthy demand. Let us, with God's help, continually surrender these hobbling demands. Then we can be set free to live and love. We may then be able to 12-step ourselves and others into emotional sobriety. That's the 12th step. When I first read the 12th step in Al-Anon, and they talked about the spiritual awakening, I want that. What is that? I wanted that. And my sponsor took me through those steps and got me to that spiritual awakening. And I'm not done, but almost. So I told you about my affinity with the Native American Indians. I hope I can get through this. It's the Lakota Indians, and this is their instructions for living. And I just wanted to read these to you, if I can find them. Okay, Lakota instructions for living. Friend, do it this way. That is, whatever you do in life, do the very best you can with both your heart and mind. And if you do it that way, the power of the universe will come to your assistance if your heart and mind are in unity. When one sits in the hoop of the people, one must be responsible because all of creation is related. And the hurt of one is the hurt of all. And the honor of one is the honor of all. And whatever we do affects everything in the universe. If you do it that way, that is, if you truly join your heart and mind as one, whatever you ask for, that is the way it's going to be. Thank you for letting me share tonight.